Welcome to the Work Revolution podcast, where we believe, in fact, we know, there's a better way to work and live. And we are here to challenge the status quo of obsolete workplace practices and ideas about leadership. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Deborah. Along with you, our listeners, we're evolving our thinking about what it means to belong, innovate, and create change at work. Join us as we dispel the myths of meritocracy, hierarchy, and other bullshit practices that get in the way of all of us harnessing our full potential to make a better world. Welcome back to our listeners. It's Deborah and Lisa here tackling what I think is going to be a really fun and interesting topic about what do we need more of in our world right now, Lisa? Female leaders occupying spaces or feminist leaders? And so this is an idea that came to me probably a few months back now, you know, doing research for other podcast topics that we were talking about. And as we met some women along the way, we had lots of interesting discussions. I began to think, you know, what it would have meant to so many women, including me, and I'm sure you might feel the same way, to have had more female role models, support, representation, what that might have meant to us in our lives and in our careers, most certainly. And so I began to grapple with this idea a little bit about, you know, what's the difference between being a female leader and being a feminist leader? Admittedly, I am not an expert in feminism. I'm not a scholarly reader of feminist theory. I know that, and in fact, it's an area where I've felt a bit of nervousness around even talking about it or using the word. Not so much now. I'm kind of getting over it now. But, you know, throughout most of my adult life, it wasn't something I was, you know, using very much. How about you?
Yeah, well, as we were talking about doing this episode, I was recalling what I would call your peak feminism, which was in 1990. And this was the year after 14 women were gunned down in Montreal in the engineering school at Université de Montréal. But that was sort of, wasn't so much that triggered it, but at that time, 89, 90, was when I was living in Vancouver, Canada, and I was working at a feminist bookstore, women's feminist bookstore, proudly calling itself feminist. I was writing for a feminist newspaper, and I was really politically active. It was the first time in my life that I'd ever seen people picketing outside of an abortion clinic the first day I got to Vancouver. And it really was a time, so I guess I was around 25, but it really activated in me a desire, partly born out of the injustice of it all, to really learn more about feminism. I'd taken a course years before in women's studies when I was a student in Montreal. But what I realized, and what I realize now, I think more particularly, was I was very influenced by American feminism. So Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan, Angela Davis, women who were writing at the time. And I mean, I guess apart from Angela Davis, you know, a very kind of white Western idea of what feminism meant and what it was. And, you know, over the years, I think I've evolved from sort of that early younger self, but I still feel deeply committed to the ideals of feminism. And in fact, I think this is a real apropos topic for us because it's not in necessarily being a woman that we advance feminist causes, but it's in adopting a feminist mindset. And I know that's what we're going to be digging into today.
So I think where you're going with that is that one does not have to, you know, be born into a woman's body, a girl's body, to have a feminist mindset. And I think that is really important. I think, you know, I've also heard it talked about as feminist principles. So why don't we dig into that a little bit more? Like, what does that mean to us? What does that mean to you, those feminist ideals or feminist principles? And what does that mean for leadership? Because, you know, it's really important that we continue to have women advance into positions of influence, you know, into positions of leadership and into areas that have been traditionally male dominated. And that is happening. Now, arguably, it's probably happened at a slower pace than I think a lot of us would have thought over the course of our career. Like if I think about the last 30 years, it's like, I think there was a real push around the time that you were just describing when you were in your 20s. And then it seemed to go away for a long time. And now I'm seeing a little bit more focus on this. And in fact, I think it's could be stated that in some ways, there's been some steps back. When we look at what's happening globally, especially what's happening in Afghanistan right now, what's happening, you know, in the United States around abortion, you know, becoming again a huge, this is unraveling as we are recording this session. So there is, it's certainly hugely important, and there's so much more work to be done. And there have been a ton of firsts, which we can talk a little bit more about, but there's a lot more to come. So let's just start with, well, what does that mean, feminist principles? What does it mean to you?
Yeah, well, for me, I think primarily that, you know, feminism is born of a place of challenging the traditional ideas of women's place in the social and economic sphere. Women have traditionally been told that we're good at certain things like childcare and cooking and, you know, sort of keeping the home fires burning. And I know I'm being incredibly reductionist when I say that, but that women's sphere was the home and men was the political sphere, the economic sphere. You know, and again, I'm talking largely about Western cultures, although there's you know, a fair bit of history throughout the planet of women being subjugated to roles of dependence. In fact, you know, marriage, the whole idea behind marriage was that a woman was property. And when she married and the you know, dad walking daughter down the aisle was to pass on, the tradition was to pass on the, you know, the ownership of the daughter from the father to the husband. So we have long traditions in many different areas of our lives that really have entrenched ideas about women's place in society. And ultimately what feminism says is we reject this. There's, you know, there's nothing inherent about me having the particular body as a woman, I identify as a woman, the particular body or reproductive organs that makes me, you know, have particular aptitudes to do things that are, I would consider perhaps more menial. And I'll talk about this in a little bit around women in the workplace and how we're often expected to do the tasks which are called non-promotable, right? The office parties right. And all of that.
Yes.
But I would say, and I will just add one thing here. To me, ultimately, when I think of feminism as a model, let's say of leadership versus a female leader, to me, it's the idea of moving away from power over, which is a more paternalistic, patriarchal idea of leadership, to power with. You know, we're together, we're collaborating, and we're leading from a place of the collective. And we're championing the diversity of all voices. To me, that is what it means to step into work, into leadership, into advocacy, activism from a feminist perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't want people out there to think we're suggesting that you must become everybody must become an activist, but a level of awareness about and a caring about equality, equity issues, developing a level of awareness about systemic barriers and issues, and how does that present itself? And how bias presents itself to just lean into understanding that a little bit better. And I think a commitment to, you know, bringing that awareness into our work and to look for opportunities to dismantle these structures and these systems and biases that are built into what we have and to bring others along. Women, people of color, transgender people. I think feminist leadership principles is really a focus on equality. And you're right, we have inherited a masculine model, I'll call it, of this power over approach, this more dominant, more aggressive approach to power and leadership. And so many of the women who have made it through those systems and structures did adopt those behaviors. I mean, what choice did they really have? Otherwise, it would have been pretty tough. And boy, are we eternally grateful for those women who pushed through. You know, I'm thinking of a number of women over the years I've met or worked with who, you know, who made it through fields like engineering, who were in, you know, maybe financial services, capital markets. And, you know, they paved the way. And it wasn't always easy. Would I call them feminist leaders? Not necessarily, but I don't want to take away from the hugely important role that those women have played in paving the way. You know, even though they might have been tough, they might have been tough people to be around. You know, you and I have both heard people say that they've had a really challenging time with some female bosses in the past, right? And the last thing I'll say on that before I flip it back to you is that the trend in leadership right now, what this, you know, sort of the newest thinking in terms of leadership is this idea of leadership as power with versus power over. So it's also, turns out, just the best way to lead.
And this is, you know, and I find this often a moot point when people talk about the distinction between management and leadership, because any role that you have as a leader also have some managerial aspects to it. But what we do, what we've done, and I think we're starting to see some shifts that I believe are influenced by feminism, is that you manage projects, you manage schedules, you manage budgets, but you lead people, right? People are not to be managed. Like that's where, and I think to me, that's an idea that whose time has come and gone. And, you know, when you look at, you know, for instance, the period of time around COVID, the beginnings and the sort of this, the sequels in the middle, because I'm hoping that what we're feeling and living right now is actually a bit of an end, or at least a transition to living with the virus, is that the countries that were really doing the best on this were led by women, you know, Angela Merkel in Germany and in New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, you know, who were taking accountability for appropriate decision-making. And it's not necessarily, and I'm flipping gears here a bit, it's not necessarily that, you know, that women are better leaders because they are women. But one of our favorite people that you and I follow on LinkedIn, Thomas Chamorro Pramusik, who wrote that piece, "If Women Are Better Leaders, Why Are They Not in Charge?" Well, this comes back to incredibly powerful systems that have kept women out. I mean, I recall not even that many years ago, there was a gentleman's club in Toronto, and I had been asked to do a facilitation, and there were two entrances to it. And I asked, when I was in there, like, how come there are two front doors? And it was explained to me that up until the 70s, the one door was the women's entrance because the women couldn't go through the front door. And so, you know, we have these systems that have been in place. And
just to be clear, it wasn't the 1870s.
No, it was not the 1870s. It was not the 1870s.
The 1970s, that was still happening. Yes.
I was alive when this was, yes, when these things were in place.
Yeah.
So not only are, you know, when you talked a moment ago about women excelling in different fields, there was not an even playing field to start with. Like women have had to push and endure and, you know, have things thrown at them, you know, like resistance to women getting an education, going into medicine, all types of things. So not only was it just women were intelligent and desiring to do these things, but they had to fight against these forces, these systemic societal forces that had been put in place by patriarchal institutions and places of higher learning and et cetera. So, you know, I'm grateful, as you said, I'm grateful to the women who, both women that we know and women who've come before us, because a lot has been done so that people like you and I are in a far better position, I think, than our mothers were and that our grandmothers were. The one thing I did say at the beginning, I wanted to mention this, and this was the article that I'd seen in the Financial Times about these women who realized that they weren't advancing in their careers as quickly as men. And they sat down and tried to figure, well, why is it? And they came up with a list of which they called the non-promotable, hang on, I've written it down here somewhere, non-promotable tasks, NPTs. And non-promotable tasks are the things like organizing a colleague's leaving present, being on a committee for the United Way campaign, or, you know, upskilling an intern, right? Things that are not going to be seen by the leaders of the organization, the people who make ideas or make decisions around promotion, as things that are going to drive your career. And, you know, there's nothing inherent about a women's pair of hands that are better at washing dishes than a man's pair of hands, is at least yet to see the evidence on this. But, you know, women often end up in these tasks. And what's been interesting is the research shows if you have a group of men who have had some sort of event, the men will naturally figure out what to do and they will do it. But as soon as you have a mixed gender group in the workplace, the men will leave at the end of the event and the women will step in and do the tidying up and the cleaning. And so, you know, one of the things that they say in this particular article is that men will step away from unrewarded and non-promotable work. And women spend, it says here, the data, the median that women spend in a year on these non-promotable tasks at work is about 200 hours, a month of extra dead-end work in your career. So this is a real issue. Why, again, I think that, you know, we talk about feminism, it's not about making the men do the dishes. It's let's talk about what an equitable division of labor is in the workplace for things that are we're all a part of.
I have totally lived that. I've seen that happen. An organization I worked with, right, you know, a couple times a year would host events for clients in their space. And for many years, I saw this play out that a whole bunch of the women in the organization, various roles, it wasn't necessarily our job, would set up for the event, deal with the catering. I mean, the food was prepared, and but there was so much extra work to do. Who was all in the kitchen at the end of the evening, tidying up, organizing, putting all the furniture back? And it was so fascinating to me to see this completely divide down gender lines, where all the women were doing those things. And here's the thing, I fell into it because I didn't want to be an asshole. I didn't want to look at all my female colleagues going, they're all doing this work and I'm going to be like, see you later. And it always bothered me and nobody, you know, yeah, it was never openly discussed.
Yeah. And you're reminding me of something else that I'm probably not going to get much applause for this, but I will say it anyway, as someone who never had children, was the times in my career when there was a baby shower or somebody was getting married and we were all invited to chip in. And these are great things to celebrate. I'm not dismissing that these are powerful things, but nobody threw any party for me over the course of my career until I was leaving. And it was my goodbye party. So the accomplishments that I had that were non-traditional female roles were never appreciated and celebrated. And I'm sounding grudgy about it. I'm not. But to me, again, these are cultural things that show up in organizations. And to me, a feminist organization celebrates everybody's accomplishments, whether they're popping out babies, whether they're getting a master's degree, whether they've just, you know, started a side hustle that's, you know, putting their kids through university. Let's celebrate everything that everybody finds important in their lives. And let's just dial down these traditional celebrations that really reinforce what we think is important to society, because everybody's contribution is important, regardless of what that is.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I hadn't really thought of it that way before. Yeah. I think also, you know, feminist leadership, it's really about being a change agent, I think. And we talked a little bit about power, and I know you had some things to say about that. Power is a tough one for me. We talked a bit about power with versus power over, but female expressions of power is, that's a tricky area. I don't know. Did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about with regard to that?
I think we have a very narrow definition of power. Like, power can be nuanced. It can be subtle. It can be deeply tactful. It can be applied in some instances and not others. And it's also the value that we give who, in fact, has the power. I was reading something just this morning, and I'm going to forget where I read it, but it was about how we often dismiss the kinds of power or the people wielding the power based on hierarchy and status. And so we automatically assume that because somebody is higher up in an organization, that their words are more meaningful, that their opinion is more important. And in fact, this now I remember, it was in Amy Edmonston's The Fearless Organization. And again, the notion of hierarchy, yes, we do need people in decision-making positions in order to, you know, call the shots to some extent. And, you know, for a large part of our history and organizational life, those people have been men. But we lose out a lot when just a small group of people in powerful positions are making the decisions. And if we expand our idea of power to think like, you know, who actually has some knowledge and some interest in this, who can contribute to a decision that is in the best interests of all of us, that to me changes our definition of power from being a position or a role that you carry in an organization. Because I can tell you, once you walk out the door and you're unemployed or you're retired, like that status is gone. right? So let's kind of look at ourselves as a powerful group of people in the workplace who can make things happen, as opposed to the boss calls the shots and the boss is the wisest. And, you know, this is, we talk about psychological safety in the workplace. Like, it often feels unsafe to say what's really on your mind. And I think women, you know, there was lots of research on whether you call it imposter syndrome or being, you know, told to be a good girl your whole life, that women often don't feel comfortable speaking up in these hierarchical organizations or power structures. So to me, it's about expanding what we believe power to be, how we define power, and to start changing our notions of what it means to contribute to an organization and its goals and its mission and vision. So that's, yeah, I think that's my final word on power for today.
So it's really asking women to be really courageous. And I think that's true of both, you know, it's, I don't think that's only true of feminist leaders. I think any woman who's pushed her way into spaces that where she's one of very few, if not the only woman, you know, I have a friend who's, you know, she's only in her 40s and she's an architect. And, you know, when she started architecture school, of 100 people in the program, she was one of 10 women. There's still a very, very long way to go. And so I think what we've realized is that when women started to go into these types of programs, I'll use a couple examples like the construction industry, the engineering field, that work was done. Well, women are going there now. So now we're okay. It's going to all be fine, right? But what was not taken into account is what were those environments going to be like for women? And that's where we've realized, wow, there's all these systemic things happening. And some outright blatant hashtag Me Tooing and some blatant, you know, sexual harassment and discrimination too. So some of it's very subtle, some of it's pretty in your face. So I think, you know, we've really realized, wow, there's a lot going on in work environments that we really need to be aware of to make these spaces, as you've said, more safe, more welcoming, places where, you know, we don't have to put on our armor every day just to go into the workplace. So that's what I mean by that courageousness. I think it has taken a great deal of courageousness. And the other thing I wanted to add to this in terms of what I think about when I think of feminist leadership and feminist principles is this idea that, you know, when we think about traits that we do consider more traditionally feminine, you know, empathy maybe being one of them, compassion, perhaps caring, that we realize that those things actually have a great deal of value. And they have not had value in our, from an economic sense. And I think largely my theory on that is largely because traditionally and historically, most of that work is provided for free by women because they did not have the opportunity, like you spoke to in the beginning, they just didn't have the opportunities. They were sort of relegated to those roles. And now what we're realizing is, wait a minute, like caring for your house, preparing food, cooking, caring for children, teaching them, parenting, caring for elderly people, you know, showing up to help people who are suffering with health issues, mental health challenges, socioeconomic issues. I'm thinking of social work. These professions have been grossly undervalued. And so what I think part of feminist leadership is also understanding that even if we just want to lean into all those more feminine attributes, that they're not worthless, right? If you have to start paying someone to do all of those things, you're going to barely, and you want good quality care, for example, you're going to really quickly realize how valuable that is to you.
For sure. One of my perpetual gripes is that, you know, many restaurants are run by chefs, right? These like ego personality chefs. But, you know, women are cooking, and I'm going, I'm huge generalization caveat. You know, women have been cooking meals for children and their families their entire lives, right? Men coming home from work. But, you know, when a man cooks, you know, there's the celebrity aspect to it. And you can think about, like, you know, a woman in a kindergarten teacher versus a tenured male professor in the engineering school, or like you can just look at any of these things, which could be considered the more nurturing and caring and right? When we see when men take it on as a profession, it's exalted. But what women do for free, you know, it's just not valued in the same way. And I would argue it's probably more important to take care of children really well than 21-year-old university students. But that's just a little bias that I'm sharing there.
Right.
I do want to actually say something because I thought about it earlier in our conversation. I didn't call it out. You know, we're talking about women, feminism. We've talked about trans women. And I just want to call out also, you know, women of color who face this intersectionality of not only, you know, being women and being treated poorly as women generally or can be in the workplace and particularly in non-traditional workplaces, but also face the added stress and often bigotry and prejudice for being a person of color. So there is some other stuff that we're not touching in this conversation that is at play for many women in the workplace and just generally speaking on this planet.
In preparation for this episode, I actually was just Googling firsts for women in the year 2021, which is the year that's, you know, we've just completed relatively recently. And there was a number of articles that came up that listed, you know, anywhere between, you know, 21, 22. There was a number of, you know, things that talked about firsts for women. And I won't go through them all. I mean, I could name a few of the, I mean, Kamala Harris is obviously a really obvious one, first female vice president in the United States, but also the first Black and first South Asian American to hold that position. And there's a ton more. There's so much there. And many of those examples were American. One Canadian example is Mary Simon, who became Canada's first Indigenous Governor General. And so this is a broad list that, that crosses politics, sport. There was a couple women who became officials in the NFL. It crosses politics, business, you name it, across the gamut, where women are, and some of these women, you know, a lot of them are in their 50s, right? They're getting these opportunities later in life, which makes sense, right? Especially if they were moms and maybe that slowed things down. But, you know, for any woman, it's usually a longer road and it takes more time. So a lot of these women are coming to things later in life. One great example of that is a woman named Wally Funk, who was on the New Shepard rocket in July at the age of 82, making her the oldest person to ever go to space. But before that, she was the first female Federal Aviation Administration inspector and the first female air safety inspector at the National Transportation Safety Board. And there's lots of young women too, who are doing amazing things. And I want to bring that up because, you know, although there are things happening in our culture and around the world that, you know, I've had moments watching the news where it's been really tough to watch some of this stuff, but women are doing those firsts. And the other point I want to make about that is there are so many more firsts to come and women of all ages are doing them. And I think, and I'm so excited to see what the next 10 to 20 years brings, because I think the generation of women coming behind you and I, and I'll call it millennial women, but you know, the generations coming behind us are just going to start doing amazing things and breaking this stuff wide open. And I'm so excited to see what's going to happen when we kind of get to a tipping point where, because especially in education, you know, women are already outpacing men. For example, architecture is a great example. Like there are more women first-year architects in schools for the most part, at least here in Canada, than there are men. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Ring it, sisters. We're waiting to applaud you all.
We're waiting. Yeah. Anything else before we wrap?
I just want to acknowledge that, you know, I touched a second ago on, you know, women of our mother or grandmother's generations, they would have loved to have had the opportunities that you and I have had. In fact, I recall a conversation once with my mother, and later in life, when I was a teenager, she went back to work and she was working in education. And she said, you know, oh, the things I could have done if I hadn't raised a family. And she didn't say it in a way that was about, you know, like, look what you took away from me, you ungrateful children. At least I didn't hear it that way.
Well, that's good.
But, you know, creative, artistic, smart women like my mother and many other women who just didn't get the opportunities that we had. So, you know, we are standing on the shoulders of giants ourselves who made our lives and our opportunities possible. And, you know, part of, I think, the role of women who do become mothers is to help educate their sons in, you know, what it means for them to, for these young men to become feminists and to support the women in their lives. Because feminism has been given a bad rap that it's about, you know, women, you know, taking something away from men. It's not that at all. It's about equality. It's about fairness. It's about respect. It's about all of us feeling safe, whether what time of the day it is to be out on the streets. It's being promoted because of your skills and not because you're part of the, you know, the golf club where all your male buddies hang out. So, and this I think just ultimately creates a better world for all of us. The more people we have making decisions, the more representation we have, the more we see ourselves in whether it's sports figures, whether it's leadership positions, wherever, like it makes it possible for younger people to go in the directions that we need people to be going in. So I'm with you. I'm hopeful because I've seen change in my own lifetime.
Yeah. You just reminded me of, I saw my mom recently, and I've heard her say this before, but she said it again. You know, she said when she first got married at, you know, in her early 20s to someone she, you know, knew in high school, who was my dad. just to clarify, she never thought she would work. So that's what she saw was possible for herself. She just thought that was just an assumption she made that she didn't challenge. Now she did end up working. But, you know, now, and this is why I want to applaud, whether it's female leaders, feminist leaders, we need more of all of it. But we need those change agents, especially, you know, it creates for other women, it just creates a vision that they can have of what is possible for themselves, which is hugely important to have those, to be able to see that and to have those role models.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. That's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, if you have something to say about female leaders versus feminist leaders, we'd love to hear about it. Send us your questions also. We like to tackle workplace challenges that people are having. So you can get in touch with Lisa and I and learn more about our work through our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com. Bye for now.
Bye for now, everyone.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe and give us a review. And follow the Work Revolution Podcast on Instagram for more great content and updates about our work. In addition to two full episodes a month, we have a monthly Ask Us Anything, where we answer your questions about leadership, career maneuvering, and whatever workplace challenges you're facing. Submit your questions to our website at workrevolutionpodcast.com, where you'll find all our episodes as well as learn more about who we are. Thanks to Bernie at Blue Eye Music for our music theme and to the team at Podatize for production support. Until next time.